Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat here on NLL Radio, also available via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts on iTunes. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. I want to thank you for being here for another terrific episode of the show. You don't actually know it's terrific yet, but I can assure you it is because I have a couple of great guests this week. Kyle Rubish of the Saskatchewan Rush, and Cody Jamieson of the Rochester Nighthawks, key members for each of their teams as they will meet in the National Lacrosse League Cup Finals. And that will be starting in about a week and a half from the time this is being recorded, as we have a week off before the finals get started. So we're going to balance in this episode of Box the Beat, looking back at the division finals as Saskatchewan downed Calgary and Rochester edged Georgia, and looking ahead to the championship matchup, the first matchup in the finals between these teams since back in 2012. Since then, Rochester has won three championships. That was the first of three straight championships. Saskatchewan has won a pair and was in the finals last year. They're in their fourth straight. So these are two teams that know a lot about winning National Lacrosse League championships. We'll hear from Kyle Rubish and Cody Jamieson on Box the Beat on NLL Radio. Joining me from the Saskatchewan Rush, who are headed to their fourth straight National Lacrosse League Championship Finals, Kyle Rubish, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, I'm sure it's not getting old hat going to the finals every year. You guys seem to be still enjoying the process.
Yeah, definitely. We're on a bit of a run here, our fourth straight final, and obviously it's a goal of ours, and it doesn't get old, that's for sure.
One thing that I've noticed, and I've talked to Chris Corbeil and maybe yourself and some and Derek Keenan and some other folks about, is your tendency as a team to have little lulls, as any team is going to do, which I found over the past few years tended to be kind of early in the season. You'd have a couple of games as you're adjusting to the new season, any changes and things, and kind of getting into the flow of a season where you're pretty much favorites again, or at least up near the top of the list of favorites. But this year it seems like it's been very much you're getting out to good starts and you've been sharp, but then you seem to have little lulls during games, and Calgary really took advantage. That must have been a little nerve-wracking for you guys.
Yeah, like you said, in the past we started the seasons kind of a little slow, but I think coming into this season after losing to Georgia, we had a bit of a chip on our shoulder. But yeah, I agree with what you said. We usually have great first halves and then come out in the second half and kind of let up or lose momentum or take the penalty and let teams back in it. And we saw Calgary take advantage of that this past weekend, and they made a game of it, and we were able to kind of pull away at the end and kind of hold on for the win.
Everyone always talks about you have to play 60 minutes, you have to be focused all the time throughout an entire game, you can never let up, and nobody tries to let up, but as much as we talk about, you know, you have these little lulls or that, it's almost impossible to maintain control and focus of a game and focus on exactly what you're doing throughout 60 minutes, I find. I mean, as much as you're trying to, there are just going to be times where there are ebbs and flows in a game, right?
Yeah, we try to stress that as much as possible, like you said, and try to push for focus for the full 60 minutes, but we know things are going to happen. But in this league, we know that teams are so tight, and one mental error, one undisciplined play can really cost you. So it's important to keep stressing those ideas so it stays in your head. But yeah, one little thing can change a game, as we've seen this past weekend.
As you guys go back to the championship finals, you know, you won two in a row, and then, like you said, you lost last year, came in with a bit of a chip on your shoulders. Afterwards, maybe down the road, people will look back and say, boy, if Saskatchewan had won that third straight, they could have put together a run of, you know, it would have been a run of six or something. Who knows what's going to happen over the next few years. But at this point, none of the previous series can really matter because you've really got a good team to focus on in Rochester.
Yeah. What happened in the past is done now. It would have been nice to win three straight, but you can't change things now. And now it's all about moving forward, like you said, and we got Rochester coming up in this championship series, and they're a great team. They've obviously, we know that they beat us twice this year, so we're going to have to come in prepared and do a lot of research on them to see what we did wrong in the first two meetings and try to fix that and just be ready to battle, and we know it's going to be a tough task.
As much as you know, coaches and players and like to talk, coaches in particular really like to talk about focusing on what you as a team are doing and then looking at the other team. So focusing more on what you guys need to do, what's working for you, how you want to play your game. But obviously, like you said, when a team has beaten you twice in the season, you're looking at what they're doing and when they're successful against you, you're trying to adjust to that. So with this in the coming week or, you know, a couple of weeks, you've got with the bye week, you've got lots of time to prepare, to look at video and things. Is there a difference in the breakdown of what video you watch, whether it's your recent games to see what you guys are doing or looking back at those Rochester games as they to see what they did against you?
Yeah, I think so a bit. Like you said, I think the primary focus will be on focusing on us and what we have to do. But obviously, you're going to have to look at the things they beat us with. You're going to have to look at Vino, who's been playing amazing. See what kind of shots have been beating him. See what he did against us in the previous two. And then obviously see how their offense beat us and found holes and try to correct that as a unit. And I'm sure the coaches will have a game plan and do a lot of film. But yeah, like you said, the main focus will be on us going into this series. But obviously you have to look at what makes them successful and what they beat us with too.
Do you guys get with the bye week, are you practicing this week? I know when you had the week off after the season, I talked last week to Adrian Sorchetti, and he was saying, yeah, you guys flew in to Saskatchewan and had a practice there and then watched the Calgary-Colorado game. So you got kind of stayed in routine a bit. This week, are you getting together again, or is it a week off?
As of right now, I don't think we're getting together. I think mostly we did that because of we didn't really know of the arena availability with us playing on a Sunday. So we kind of wanted to make sure we got a practice in and kind of kept the routine together. We're playing on a Saturday for the game one of the NLL Cup. So we kind of know our routine and we'll have time for practice. So I think that was the main reason we kind of went that route.
Nice. Adaptation or absorption of the new name for the championship. It was right in there with NLL Cup.
I had to make sure I got that right. still trying to get used to it, but I do like it. I'm definitely a fan of the new trophy.
Yeah. You haven't seen it yet, I don't suppose, in person, right?
No, definitely not. Just pictures that the NLL sent out on social media.
Because everyone was worried about whether you can drink from it. And then somebody, and I still can't remember who it was, tweeted, somebody from the league said, yeah, it's hollow, you can drink from it. It's not a normal shaped cup, but it is a cup. Does that mean much to you guys?
Yeah, I saw that too. I guess just in sports and especially lacrosse, that tradition of drinking out of the cup is something special that guys always want to share with their teammates after winning a championship. So I guess that concern was pretty popular on Twitter when they announced it.
And then the thing, once a team gets it, whether it's you or Rochester, the big thing will be figuring out which way to tilt it, because it's got the uneven tops, right? The uneven surface with the slanted star shape of the design. So you either go out of the high side, so it's more controlled, because the low side, it seems like it might get out of control on you.
Yeah, again, I haven't put too much thought into that, more on how to win it, and then we'll kind of, if we are lucky enough to get it, we'll worry about it then and deal with that process then.
I'm a little disappointed. I thought you'd be preparing for every eventuality.
Not yet. We know it's still a long road ahead.
Yeah. So to be a bit more serious, I mean, Rochester, obviously a very good team who has come on. They're 8-2 or 10-2 if you include the playoffs in their final stretch here, playing very well. They've beaten you twice, and they're obviously clicking. What do you guys take looking into this? So I think before the season, you guys were favorites to do very well, obviously, because you've been doing very well. Rochester was in the midst of a retooling. They'd missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. But none of that means that they're not a very legitimate threat here.
definitely. Like you said, they kind of started off slow and had a bit of a losing streak at the start. But ever since then, they're one of the hottest teams and probably have one of the best records in the league. So it's all about peaking at the right time in this league. And we obviously know with Vino, he's one of the best goalies in the world, and they have a solid defense. And their offense is just clicking, and everyone has a role, it seems, and they have a lot of depth. So, like I said, they had that slow start, but ever since then, they've been one of the top teams in the league, and we recognize that, and you know we're going to have their hands full.
For you personally and the other guys who play on your side of the defense, Ryan Dilks and Brett Mitski and that, you guys are really going to have to focus, obviously, on Cody Jamison and Kyle Jackson, Corey Vitterelli over there as well. But, I mean, Jamison is definitely, after being gone for about a year and a half this season, very much like Rochester, he had a slow start because he was coming back from that injury. But you guys have seen enough, I'm sure, over the years and over the last 8 or 10 weeks of what he has done historically and what he's doing again to know that you've really got to be focused on him.
Oh yeah, we're totally aware of Cody. I've played against Cody my whole life and totally know what he's capable of. It's going to be quite the task to try to limit his opportunities. But like I said, again, that whole left side's been working really well. Kyle Jackson, Fennell, Vitterelli. But, yeah, Cody, he's back, and he's one of the most dynamic players in our league. So we're going to have to really focus in on him and try to limit his opportunities as best we can.
I'm curious, because he is so dangerous, probably the most dangerous player I've seen in a long time, coming across the top of the formation and shooting just as he gets to his offside. And it's something, I mean, you see him do it, we all see him do it, and yet it's successful because he's so adept and so subtle at it. That's something I guess you guys, especially the top guy on your defensive unit, has to be aware of. How do you address that? Whatever
yeah,
you can say
right.
about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of times you're playing him and you're pushing him to his offside, like you said, and you think he doesn't have a shot or he's fading away or doesn't have the angle, but he still gets that great shot off no matter where he is. So it's going to be knowing where he is 100% of the time and never really giving up on a play. You always have to have him in the back of your mind and know that he's capable of basically scoring from anywhere on the floor.
And like you say, being aware of where he is and knowing where he is all the time, which can be even harder because I find Rochester does a lot of picking and repicking, a lot of double picking, a lot of stuff to really make it hard to be able to see where any one particular player is. And of course, if you're focusing too much on Jamison, then Jackson's going to kill you. Vitterelli will take a shot and get you. And Fennell, who's been mainly a picker, but I mean, he's very capable of scoring as well.
Yeah, as much as it's cliche to say, it's going to take a whole five-guy D-unit effort. A lot of communication, like you said, all the picks and the repicks. We're going to be needing to talk a lot and kind of knowing where everyone is. And like I said, it's going to take all five guys and Kirky back there to kind of try to limit this offense because they've been really clicking in the last few weeks here.
When you talk about communication on defense, I haven't had the pleasure of getting out to a game in Saskatchewan yet, which I really want to do because I've heard amazing things about the experience. But it's such a loud building. The fans are so into it. But do the fans get noticeably quieter when you're on defense so they aren't distracting you guys or disrupting your communication?
Yeah, it's still hard to hear sometimes because the fans are so amazing and going nuts, so you really have to scream at your D partner to get them to hear. But since we first came to Saskatchewan until now, our fans have really become educated with the game of lacrosse, and they know now that when we're playing defense, things get a little bit quieter. So not only are our fans some of the best fans in the league and crazy and going nuts, but they're also pretty well educated now. So they're always helping us when we're in our D end and things need to hush down a little bit for us.
Nice. Now, we talked about how the past few years doesn't really mean anything at this point. And I'm going to go back 6 years where it really doesn't mean a whole lot to this, except that you guys played Rochester at the beginning of their title run when you guys were just getting towards elite status in this league. And there are five players on each team that were on the rosters at that point. And to me, it's interesting that for Rochester, it's two forwards, two defenders, and goalie Matt Vince. For you guys, five defenders. It's you, Corbeil, Dilks, Midtsky, and Cornwall are the five guys. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how we both have the same amount of guys, but I guess that our offense kind of in the last few years with Mark and Benny Mack and Churchy, they're a bit younger and they got drafted after that run, and we had a bit of an older offense in that, I think it was 2012 title game. I think it was 2012. So we had a bit of an older offense and we had a bit of a younger defense, and now our defense is getting older, that five guys that you said. So we've kind of stuck together, and we've seen our offense kind of get drafted and built by Derek Keenan and become one of the top offenses in the league in front of us. So like you said, we don't have anyone from the offensive end, but from that title game, but the guys now have great experience in big games and obviously have tons of skill.
As you get prepared for this, obviously things have been changing over the last few years in terms of how the playoffs work. We've gone away from the mini game or the tiebreaker game that you guys have been involved in some to the one game division semis and finals, and then into the 2-of-3 championship series. What kind do you like? Do you have any kind of a preference in the way they've played out?
Not really. I know with the mini game, it was pretty unique. You don't really see that in many other sports. Yeah. And trying to explain it to friends and family, it was sometimes a bit of a headache because they couldn't really get it. So in that aspect, I'm kind of happy that it's gone. But with the one game playoff with this past weekend, when you get to this point in the season, literally any team can win. So going into that one game, do or die, it's a little nerve wracking, but it adds to the suspense and the excitement of each and every game.
I'll tell you, when the league announced the mini game, I just thought, wow, that seems gimmicky, and I didn't like it. I thought it was a bad idea, and I thought, well, I'll see how it is. And then I was at some of them, in particular the Calgary at Rochester Championship Series, and I have seldom felt an arena as electric as an arena gets in that 10-minute game after. I mean, in that case, the home team had just won the second game in the series to force the mini game, and it was just this constant buzz, even in this brief time. But after the end of the regular game and before the mini game started, it was just this buzz, and it just built and built through the 10 minutes. I kind of miss them. I mean, in terms of just looking at statistics, which I tend to do, you guys don't worry so much, but looking back at historical statistics, it's like, oh, well, this guy got this many points in this many games, but one was just 10 minutes. I mean, there's lots of things that the mini game kind of makes challenging, but boy, they were exciting.
Yeah, they were definitely exciting. It was 10 minutes for do or die, and everything came down to that, but it was also unique with momentum, and if one team won, would the momentum carry over into that mini game, or would it flip over, and there's a lot of question marks, and I guess that all kind of led to the excitement that you were referring to. So like you said, there's the goods and the bads with it, but it was definitely exciting, that's for sure.
The big change for you guys this year, and I talked to Adrian Sorchetti about this, and I talked to some other guys, is obviously bringing in Evan Kirk for Aaron Bold, and the defense was mostly the same, really just minor tweaks, some guys getting more, broken into the league, or more veteran with Messenger and Matt Hossack playing regularly and things, but it was mostly the goaltending change. So you guys, at this point, I'd imagine, are pretty comfortable after a full season of adjusting to what Kirk wants and him adjusting to what you guys do.
Yeah, definitely. At the start, there was some adjustments where after playing with Boldy for so long, and then you have a new goalie that has different tendencies or likes different things, but it didn't take long at all. Kirky's one of the top goalies in the league, and he's played amazing all season, and he's been a rock back there for us. So sometimes, changes, it's obviously different, but it's not necessarily a bad thing, and both goalies are great goalies. We saw Boldy have a great season again, and Kirky as well. So No, Kirky's just been a great addition to our team in the dressing room and on the floor, and he's continued to be a rock back there for our unit.
With the weekend off, I know at this time of year, people are banged up in that, and it doesn't hurt to get a bit of rest time, but I'm sure you guys are itching to get back on the floor.
Yeah, it's always nice to get the week off and have some guys heal some bumps and bruises. Obviously, we've been playing all season, and playoffs kind of ramp up, so guys putting their bodies on the line even more. So it's nice in that aspect to get some time off, but at the same time, you're just itching to get going and battle for that championship trophy. So nothing we can really do about the schedule, but come next weekend, it'll be exciting to kick things off.
For you personally, I'm interested, like, watching. I mean, we've been doing our voting for IL Indoor for our year-end awards, and you know, the league, I'm sure they've collected their votes for the awards. They won't be announced till the fall, I assume, still. But everyone's watching and kind of assessing, and as I assess you over the last few years, I almost feel like people had gotten almost blasé about how good of a defensive player you are, just because you've set this standard of excellence and played very well. And then, you kind of get a little fatigue of you want somebody new. But it almost felt like to me, like, I mean, Graham Hossack, I think, just took off this year with his game. But to me, this season, I'd say the second half of this season was you being right back at peak Rubish. Would you kind of agree with that assessment?
I try not to worry too much about the awards and personal accolades, but I just try to play my game every game the same way and just leave it on the floor. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, playing with Graham with Brooklyn the last couple of summers and watching him, he's really blossomed into an elite defender. Just watching the game this past weekend, you see him just taking over and being dominant. So I definitely agree with what you had to say about Haas. But in terms of me, like I said, I just try to play my role and do my thing, and whatever comes, and hopefully we win lacrosse games.
Yeah, and I guess, obviously from your perspective, you're not thinking, oh, I want to win a Defender of the Year, or I want to do this, or I want to get that. You want to win championships, and the way that you help win championships is playing your best lacrosse. So for you, I'm sure, like, it's got to be, as you're doing that, more sense of, as you're looking back, saying, okay, am I playing the best I can? What can I do to get back to where I was, or move on from, you know, to keep getting better as I go through my career? And I guess that's really, I mean, the awards is just a side thing that obviously us in the media focus on a lot more. But for you, do you feel like you've been kind of are you happy with the way you've been playing lately, even more so than maybe you were earlier in the season?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel right now, like, our whole team is clicking, obviously. Yeah. But, no, I feel good about my game. And, like I said, I always just try to do whatever I can. And what if that's trying to create, cause turnovers, or getting as many loose balls as possible. But usually my success would come with team success. So, again, not to be too cliche, but it's always kind of working on what's best for the team and just doing my playing my role.
Now, that was actually a pretty quite a good answer to a rather meandering question that eventually got to its point. But I appreciate you sticking with me and then bailing me out there.
No problem.
Thanks for your time, and good luck down the stretch in the last few games. And I'm sure I'll see you at a rink soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Joining me on Box the Beat from the three-time champion, while you've been there, Nighthawks, who are back to the NLL Finals for the first time in a few years, Cody Jamieson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So it's obviously been kind of an up-and-down season for you guys, starting with the two big wins, and then you have the the six straight losses, then you go on the big winning streak. It's almost a little parallel to the three championships in 3 years and then 2 years out of the playoffs while the team was kind of retooled and you were dealing with your knee injury. And I mean, it's been quite a swing over the last few years and this season for you and the team.
Yeah, that's the National Lacrosse League in a nutshell, right? You go on a couple game losing streak, and you could see your playoff hopes disappear pretty quickly with the amount of parity in the league. So we're very fortunate to be a part of that little run that we had, and there's not too many of us left from that little three-peat run. So we're just us older guys are really really fortunate to be back in this position to have another chance at winning one.
It seems like just yesterday when you were one of the young guys, and now there's, I mean, you're not older. I mean, you're older than some of the others. But I mean, you've got all these guys like Shanks and Fennell and I mean, Hossack and Withers and all these guys who have been brought in over the last few drafts that have really given an injection of youth to the team. Does it seem to you like just like that you became this wily veteran?
Not something that you really think of until it happens. You just kind of look around and realize that we all play junior lacrosse, and realize you didn't play junior lacrosse against any of these young guys coming up. So you get old in a hurry.
How are you feeling in terms of, I mean, obviously that year and a half where you had the recurring knee injury, it was a very frustrating time. I've talked to you about it before that I know you worked really hard to get back and be ready to go, but obviously it takes a while to get back to feeling like yourself when you do get back to the floor.
Yeah, and even before my knee, it was my Achilles. When I tore my Achilles, and I think that's kind of what set me off and set off that chain of events of little injuries that I couldn't shake for a little while. Obviously it feels good to be back playing again, and to be quote unquote healthy is something that I've really focused on. With my trainer, we've been focusing on injury prevention rather than getting big and look good in front of the mirror. We've been just really focused on injury prevention kind of stuff and mobility stuff, just to try and keep me healthy.
And that's obviously as a player gets later into their career, that's something that becomes important. But I mean, for you, you tried a couple approaches with the knee, and obviously the first way wound up not working out. You never know until you try something. But as you are playing now, do you feel like you're getting your agility back from before, first the Achilles and then the knee?
I feel like I'm starting to do some of the things that I used to be able to do. Sometimes it's there and sometimes it isn't. I guess it's just a confidence thing. Sometimes I feel great and other times I don't. So I think it's just going to take time. But then again, I am getting older, and so I don't really know what I'll be in the future. I'm just kind of glad to be back playing game by game.
Yeah, and it does look, watching you, like you're able to do some of the things you did before that, early in the season you weren't doing, like fighting off checks and feeling confident, like absorbing or even initiating contact and then being able to turn that into stepping into a spot where you're creating some space for yourself to shoot or pass. Do you feel like that is happening for you now?
Yeah, I feel my game evolving a little bit better every week, every time we practice in every game. I feel like I'm doing something a little bit different than at the start of the year. Anybody who had an injury, can say or will be able to tell you that the first few games back they're very very timid, and mine was no different, right? I thought I was good, and I thought here I'm back, but from December, early December when I first started playing till now, it's a huge difference in my leg strength and confidence in that.
Your goal total this year of 26 is the lowest that you've had in a National Lacrosse League season where you've played. I mean, last year where you just played a couple of shifts, not counting. But it looks like you're, like you said, your game's evolved. You're obviously aware of how dangerous all the guys on the floor are around you and making sure you're facilitating for them and then taking the shots when you got chances.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was trying to evolve my game too much into a passing thing. I would just say this year and a half I've been gone, the goalie's got way better. I don't know. I had my chances this year and I just couldn't score, and I guess I'll chalk that one up as rust. Hopefully I get my touch back in the next couple of weeks here and I'm able to start scoring again.
Well, you certainly looked like you'd found your touch in the division finals. Three goals, the first three goals for the team in the final against Georgia, and obviously critical ones because that was a very low scoring game through the half, where it's it's 2-2 at the half and then still only 4-3 after three quarters.
Yeah, a couple one power play, and then one they left me open on the doorstep. When Bitterelli, Dogger, gave me a nice pass.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remember the second one was come around the net shot. So
right.
So both of our goalies, Poulin and Vino, were both lights out at the first half. And I think I took more shots than anybody else in that first half. That's why I got the goals.
As you guys go into the final, I mean, you look at Georgia and. You win the game with nine goals scored because, like you said, Matt Vince was fantastic. I thought the defense played an amazing game in terms of how well they stayed with plays. As you know, if there were little breakdowns or if Georgia got openings, the recovery of the defense I thought was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Georgia's very, very talented, right? Yeah. They got a lot of guys who we call 100-100 guys, right? Mm-hmm. Guys that you got to pay attention to. Give 100% of your attention to 100% of the time. So they got a lot of those guys who you really got to, you can't take your eye off them for a second, because if you do, then they're open and they're going to put it in the back of the net. So I think our defense did an awesome job, containing, all their dangerous threats. And like I said, that might have been the best game I saw Vino play in a long time. He was mm-hmm. He was on that night.
In terms of your offense, it seems like, through the season, and I've talked to you about this before earlier in the year, that as the season wore on, you guys really got a solid sense of keep doing the things you want to do, keep the ball moving, keep your feet moving to get open, and good things will happen even if they don't right away. And it's hard to find a better example than a game where you only score four goals through three quarters and then you manage to get five in a crucial fourth quarter, of that confidence in it eventually working.
Yeah, it took a little bit to get going, and it's not for lack of effort at the start of the year, but I just feel we all took a little time to adjust. A lot of I never played with a lot of that offense before, even though I've been here, I've been hurt, right? So and adding Shanks and Fennell onto the front end, I never really got to play too much with KJ or Bones Courier. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. Total new offense, really, and besides me, Dogger, and Rezzy, I never really played with too many of the other guys before, so it was an adjustment for everybody, but we're coming together.
You go on to Saskatchewan in the finals, and there's no time really to worry about not making the playoffs for a couple of years, how it feels to get back to the finals, because you've got a lot to deal with in that Saskatchewan team.
Yeah, they're a great team. They've been kind of the cream of the crop for the last, 4 or 5 years. So they got a great group of guys over there. So hopefully we'll be able to come on top of it.
It's got to give you some confidence. I know beating them twice in the regular season doesn't mean you're going to win games in the finals, but it has to be nice because they can be a very overwhelming team at times, but I would think that would give you confidence that if you have some bad stretches, you know what you are able to do against them.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's just that little confidence that we can play with these guys. A lot of we got a big turnover on our team this year and last year, so a lot of them weren't around for the dark days when we haven't beat that team since 2012 up until this year. So it was a long time coming to finally be able to beat those guys. yeah, so just that little bit of confidence in us older guys that, yeah, we still got it a little bit.
Yeah. When you're, as you're preparing to play them, and I talked to Kyle Rubish for this show as well and asked him the same question about watching video and preparing for a finals like this where you've played the team a couple times in the season. I know coaches like to stress what you are going to be doing and focusing on your game rather than the opponent. So how do you balance that video review between focusing on you guys and what you've been doing the last few games and what you need to do versus looking at the games against Saskatchewan to see what was successful and what you can improve on from those games?
Well, I think you just look at the film and see, you know, what they really like to do or what they're really trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish mm-hmm. with the little plays that they have. We know, Derek Keenan's an awesome coach and he's one of the best out there. And he's got a system that really, really works. It worked in the junior A, you know, it's worked in senior with all the Brooklyn boys, and you know, it's obviously worked in the NLL with the Rush. So, you know, in that system, they run it and they run it to a T, and it's a very good system. So it's more or less just trying to show everybody what they're trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish, and just to be ready for it.
For you, again, you know, talking about this is your first season back playing, you know, after missing last year, and you make it all the way to the finals. For those of you, the few of you who were there, you know, during the 3 years of winning back-to-back championships, how much can you share from that with the rookies and the second-year and third-year guys who haven't had a chance to, you know, even be in the playoffs, let alone get to the finals, and how much do they just have to experience it themselves?
I think more than anything, this year is different from all three of those. Where two of those championships were one game finals, and one was the infamous mini game one. Yeah. So, you know, this one's going to be totally different, totally new for all of us. The only thing we can say is, you know, game one is game one. You know, we got to be ready to go right off the bat. You know, if we come up short on the first night, then at least we got a second night and potentially a third night to come out on top. So that's experience doesn't really matter when you get here. We've all won championships on that team. Maybe not all of us in the NLL, but throughout our careers, everybody's played in big games before. And, you know, you really try not to change anything with your game, and you just try and focus on a shift at a time.
I asked Kyle Rubish this as well, and I'm curious what you think in terms of a preference between the 2-3 format, the one-game format, and the, as you mentioned, the infamous mini-game that you guys were part of that worked out pretty well for you the last time that you did it.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was an intense one. You know, yeah. I don't feel like you want to be a part of that mini-game with only 10 minutes to come out and prove what you got. And, you know, thank God we had Craig Point that night.
Mm-hmm. I was at that, those two games, I guess, the game two of that final against Calgary and then the mini game. And I mentioned earlier in the show that I wasn't a fan of the concept when I heard about it, but it's hard to imagine a much more intense building and a much more exciting atmosphere than it was as you guys went through. You know, you come back and win the game, go into the mini game, and then when you fall behind and then you get the late goals from Craig Point with Joe Walters playing such a big role, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no. Joe Walter scoring a big goal and finding Craig for a big goal.
Yeah,
it was definitely intense, and it was definitely, you know, probably amazing to watch from the stands or from on TV. But mm-hmm. to be a part of it, and you know, you'd hate for that to you know, I'd hate to be on Calgary's end to lose that game.
Yeah, it is. I think this is the ideal. And the one thing the league always said, that was kind of an interim step while they moved towards what they wanted, which was, you know, they like the 2-3 final. And I think it does give a better chance for the best team to win the series.
That's usually what they say. You know, mm-hmm. At least a series, it gives the better team more of a chance to win. Mm-hmm. But I've been a part of one game finals too. And when I played in the NCAA, and that's just as exciting, you know, knowing that you gotta be at your best for a one game final. I don't mind either one of them.
Yeah, you of course played a key role, a particularly key role in one of the more exciting NCAA championships when you scored an overtime winner, right, to win one.
Yeah, 2009 Syracuse. Yep.
So the one thing you mentioned, the guys on the team all having played at high levels, and that's one thing as you get to this level, and it is new for these a lot of these guys to be in the NLL playoffs and in a championship. But like you said, players are coming through, especially the guys who go through the college system, but even the guys coming through junior in Canada, or some of them, of course, have both. It is such a high level of play at all these different leagues that they're in that just that is helping to prepare for them for something like this. But does it translate? I mean, from your experience, did it, that NCAA experience and your, you know, junior A experience with Minto Cups and things, did that translate, or was it a really new thing going to NLL championships?
Well, it definitely translated. You know, it's a big game, and, you know, you lose those, you know, you don't ever lose the butterflies, but you lose, you know how to handle them. You lose the, you know, the butterflies all game that make you sick. You know, you're always nervous before a big game, but as soon as the whistle blows, you're able to shut that off the more you play in big games. You know, you look at our rookies right now, that, you know, the ones from Ohio State, they played in the national championship for Division One at Ohio, or for Ohio State. And, you know, that's being played in front of 50,000 people. I know Saskatchewan's got an awesome fan base, and I expect them to be there loud and proud and, you know, be really loud. But, you know, when you play in front of 50,000 people, you know, 15 doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah. What, how does the, I mean, the one thing with the 50,000, it's outside. You take that 15,000 in Saskatchewan and crank in some music as well, and it can make it pretty challenging for an offense because of the enclosed space to communicate. And I know they tend to do it more on the defensive side when the visitors are on defense. The fans really ramp up and things. How challenging is it to go into that environment and try to play your game?
Yeah, it's very, very loud there. You know, it's definitely the loudest that I've played in. But, you know, you prepare for it. You know what's going to happen. You know they're loud. You know they're a great group of fans. So you just got to be prepared, and you just got to talk your way through it, or try to talk your way through it. It's nothing that you can't prepare for and expect. You know, if you expect it, it's not going to be a shock to anyone when it happens.
I have one play that I want to ask you about from a game earlier in the season, because I really enjoyed watching it and had to watch the replay to make 100% sure it's exactly what you guys meant. But you were playing, I think it was when Saskatchewan was in Rochester, actually, and you came around the top, threw a pass off the glass behind the net, off above the boards, for Josh Currier, cutting in where he grabbed it and went and dunked a shot, and I thought it was an intentional pass off the backboards, and then you see the replay and it clearly was. Is that something that, I mean, I'm not sure how much you can work on that specific play in practice, and how much it just has to be recognizing it as the situation evolves?
I think that play Bowens made me look good, because I don't think that pass was intended to him. I think that play was no, he just made me look good on that, on one of my mess ups. But, you know, we do practice it from time to time. Me and Dogger, you know, are always doing it. You know, but thanks for thinking it was intentional.
Man, I probably shouldn't have asked, because I had this whole narrative around that play. How it was such a great play that you meant to do it.
No, not that time. Me and Dogger, we do tell each other that we're gonna do that play together sometimes, but. You know, not that play in particular.
How much, with the amount of movement that you guys have in the offense, with both foot movement to get open and then the ball moving so quickly the way it has been all season, how difficult is it to not overpass? Because the ball moves so much that occasionally there can be a risk of kind of you're just getting the ball and moving it. But sometimes there are really good shooting chances that you can miss, but you guys seem to have a really nice sense of when to keep it moving to someone else and when it's time to let it rip.
Yeah, I think the influx of Mike Kersey's offense, you know, him coming in and bringing in what he had brought to the table. You know, we do drills in practice and then shoot around that, you know, are designed for the end game. So when we're swinging the ball, and, you know, he knows he has some drills that we're catching and we're shooting at a certain point in the drill, or at a certain time from a certain spot. So I think it just comes second nature to us, and especially the rules that he puts in place. You know, shoot first, that pass second. sometimes we don't always follow it, but usually we have trust in all our offense that, you know, when they shoot, that they think they're going to score every time.
Brendan Glasheen and Brian Shanahan were talking, I think, during the during one of the games about how you guys had a pull-up contest, and Matt Vince won, which people don't think of goalies as being likely to win those, but if you know Matt Vince, it's not surprising. But apparently Akersi was second, so I guess he's always ready to step in if you guys do screw up.
Yeah, you don't need to pump his tires at all. I think he's overinflated.
All right, we'll lay off the Akersi side, but really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and wish you best of luck, and I know I can't wait to watch this series.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's get this thing going.
Yes, let's get it going, Cody Jamieson and Kyle Rubish. Thank you both guests for great conversations here on Box the Beat on NLL Radio. We're going to have to wait for a little while, as there is the bye weekend before the NLL finals get underway. So you can pass the time by going to IL Indoor, reading the best of lacrosse coverage on the internet, and you can go back and listen up to the entire season's worth of Box the Beat here on NLL Radio and on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. Thanks so much for being with me this week. As always, lacrosse friends, and we'll see you next time.